The following is an AI reading of my blog called
Lunar Punk, the future of cryptocurrencies in regulatory hell.
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
During high school, while various groups like Nazis, metalheads, punks, hippies, and normies battled over their beliefs, I found myself captivated by cyberpunk literature from authors such as William Gibson and Neil Stephenson, along with cypherpunk philosophy. Cyberpunk is a genre of science fiction that revolves around dystopian futures, often featuring a mix of lowlife and high-tech elements. Unlike Star Trek's depiction of advanced spaceships for entire civilizations, the main characters in cyberpunk stories are typically poor journalists or junkies who find themselves in situations where they can utilize technology to impact their reality. Cyberpunk introduced the concept of the first internet, often referred to as the Matrix Gibson or a metaverse Stephenson in literature. This genre explores the potential for collective immersion in what is described as a collective hallucination. The technology within these works possesses intriguing characteristics. It twists the asymmetry of power between the powerful and individuals in favor of the individuals. In Stephenson's Diamond Age, a poor girl gets a young lady's illustrated primer. It is a book, today we might say a tablet, in which artificial intelligence educates the reader. Someone who acquires this technology can use it to change their environment, even if someone else doesn't like its states. Corporations which often merge in cyberpunk, much like in our reality today, and sometimes not even the inventor of the technology in question. The second interesting feature of technology is that it cannot be uninvented. If a technology is created, the world must adapt to it. Today, we see that states do not understand this. They are attempting to turn around the functioning of basic technologies like web browsers and regulating the use of cookies, trying to regulate internet payments, cryptocurrencies, social networks. And that's where cypherpunk comes in. It has only partially made its way into literature, Stephenson's Cryptonomicon, Paul Rosenberg's A Lodging of Wayfaring Men, or The Breaking Dawn, or the anonymous work called Agora.txt. Cypherpunk technology is in direct conflict with the world's powers and predicts how the powerful will react to it. The cypherpunks have worked systematically on encryption and anonymization technologies, PGP, Mixmaster, Tor, peer-to-peer networks, and electronic cash, eCash. Electronic cash was the most important element of the cypherpunk vision described in the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto by Timothy C. May, and it was the most difficult to implement. Cypherpunks perceived that states would try to prevent this vision and would use the traditional excuses for why they regulate something fighting tax evasion, terrorism, and drugs. They even predicted the emergence of prediction markets, which you can read about in this book, and even that it would be impossible to keep state and corporate secrets, WikiLeaks. The technologies of cypherpunk are already here, and they have indeed reversed the asymmetry of power. One thing is certain, the technologies really cannot be uninvented. Any criticism of cryptocurrencies, of encryption, of anonymization, which is based on the idea that these technologies are bad and we must ban them, is working with the false notion that it is possible to turn the arrow of technological progress. Ever since gunpowder and the printing press were invented, these technologies have worked despite efforts to regulate them. In Japan, the former Prime Minister Abe was assassinated in July 2022. Japan is known for strict gun regulations. The attacker made the gun himself at home. When technology exists, creating a weapon is simply implementing information on how the technology works into physical space, utilizing other technologies such as three-dimensional printing and at-home manufacturing. It's not possible to ban the printing press, despite the fact that powerful figures of the time detested what emerged from Gutenberg's invention. The evolution of this conflict remains unclear, but one thing is certain, we won't forget about technologies like Bitcoin, Tor, or encryption. Similar to how states have attempted to prohibit marijuana use, millions of users continue to defy these bans without any repercussions. When asked by the editor of Reason magazine about his thoughts on potential abuse of these technologies for funding terrorism or blackmail, the author of the Crypto Anarchist Manifesto merely responded, "They have to deal with it. We must learn to adapt and respond accordingly, as these technologies will never disappear. The idea of shutting down Bitcoin is no longer feasible, regardless of whether the reasons are good or bad. Solarpunk and Lunarpunk are two distinct subgenres in speculative fiction. Solarpunk focuses on creating a positive future where humanity has addressed its major issues like sustainability, climate change, and harmonious coexistence with nature. This genre features protagonists who use advanced technology to enhance their lives and improve the world around them. The atmosphere is vibrant and sunlit, unlike the dark, dystopian settings found in cyberpunk narratives. In the realm of cryptocurrencies, this sunny outlook is exemplified by Ethereum. Here, individuals collaborate through crowdfunding efforts to develop public goods and establish a parallel financial system that promotes transparency and inclusiveness. They respond to the threat of state bans by saying that such a good thing as Ethereum cannot be banned, why would they? And it's a question that, if seriously considered, would be fear-inducing. Ethereum and Solarpunk crypto are not in conflict with power, but want to cooperate with it, and they somewhat naively assume that the other side will also behave rationally and is interested in this cooperation. Solarpunk is thriving at a time when markets are going up. Projects have crazy valuations and want to solve every problem in the world: global warming, urbanism, transportation, access to financial services, international trade, direct democracy, funding. Of non-profits, Solarpunk is playing on the edge of communal, cooperative progress and central planning. Architects, artists, natural scientists, programmers, designers invent the future based on their expertise as best as they can. The text that begins after text below has been converted into a form that's suitable for audio narration. The question of someone not being comfortable with such a future is not considered. Solarpunk sort of assumes that their solutions are good enough that no one can reject them. And then the bear attacks, crash, chaos, and the states have to bail out all the investors in the public good. By regulation, everything is visible, everything is in transparent public blockchains. There is no need to hide until the need to hide comes, and then it is too late. And repression comes. Lunarpunk is a response to the inevitable attack. As the need for states, corporations, and criminal groups to monitor, tax, regulate, and protect increases, a natural response arises: a technology of anonymity, encryption, invisible, unregulated. Financial flows and other forms of communication is developed and used by the people. With such positive feedback loops, the need for regulation and monitoring becomes more important, as in, see, they're avoiding our control, we must increase surveillance. This leads to improved technologies that can bypass regulation and surveillance even further. Creative destruction, why is decentralization anti-fragile? What occurs following an attack? How does a system respond? A centralized system will collapse after enduring a successful strike. While it may resist attacks, a single successful one can cause the entire structure to crumble. This exemplifies fragility. Once attacked, the object or system plummets and disintegrates. Picture a cup falling from a towering green skyscraper down to the ground. If specialists, economists, central bankers, politicians, and bureaucrats orchestrate a society and it experiences a downfall, everyone entangled in the economy endures, even numerous individuals not directly involved bear the second-order consequences. All it takes is one seemingly innocent failure: a badly set interest rate, too high a tax, too much regulation, too much money printed, and everything collapses like a house of cards. Solarpunk's efforts to make things better come into conflict with the powers that be, because they pretend, and some even believe they have a patent on good, want to solve climate change or reduce transaction costs, transportation of people and goods, provide loans, or produce better money. Solarpunks are trying to cooperate with them, but often their reaction is surely someone is funding terrorism or laundering money in the process. Regulate, ban, subjugate, that's the most common response to someone doing something better than the state. An explanation of Lunarpunk: this video gives me chills every time, and here comes Lunarpunk. Unlike standard computer programming as we know it, and as Ethereum uses it, Lunarpunk uses a different principle called anonymity engineering. Instead of determining who won the token vote, an anonymized zero-knowledge proof is used to verify the poll. In place of recording the amounts sent by each individual on a public ledger like Bitcoin or Ethereum, a proof that no new money was created is constructed, and only the transaction participants are aware of the amounts involved. All communication is encrypted, with only the essential parts of transactions and interactions visible. Everything is shrouded in moonlight. In Lunarpunk, technologies such as Monero, Tor, or DarkFi, even the fact that you're communicating can be invisible, since it often involves fabricated or decoy communication. Unlike Ethereum, which is a single project with apps built on top of it, Lunarpunk is a decentralized ecosystem. A decentralized ecosystem possesses the quality of antifragility it improves when faced with challenges. The market usually exhibits this property as well. For instance, we have thousands of food producers in the market. When there's an issue in the market, like a shortage of crucial food items, companies capable of adjusting production to provide alternatives will begin to flourish. This also includes firms that don't require the scarce resource at all. These market attacks contribute to enhancing the entire ecosystem. Businesses unable to adapt flexibly either adjust or fade away, leading to an overall improvement in the ecosystem. A similar concept is observed in nature. Viruses and bacteria that can effectively adapt to changes in their hosts' immune systems are the ones that survive. In a highly vaccinated population, a variant of the virus that the vaccine doesn't cover starts to spread. In a wildfire environment, certain individuals and species can survive due to their resistance to wildfires. For example, birds have the ability to escape when they sense the fire. Other creatures reproduce in a way that allows new individuals to emerge after the fire is extinguished, drawing nutrients from what remains. These ecosystems become stronger as a result of this destruction. Following an attack, growth occurs. The Lunarpunk crypto economy operates on similar principles. It consists of projects designed to respond to spying, censorship, blocking, and regulation by being encrypted, uncensorable, unblockable, and unregulatable. However, some technologies may not be adequate for this purpose, as ciphers can be broken or an attacker might find a way to censor, block, or regulate something. In these cases, those projects will disappear, allowing the Lunarpunk ecosystem to improve once again. Only the strongest will survive, and another attack will come, stronger and more sophisticated, which in turn will kill more projects. If there is a demand for the services that Lunarpunk projects provide, and there are a sufficient number of them with different attitudes towards attackers and different defenses, the Lunarpunk system becomes anti-fragile. I even consider shouting out, "Regulate and attack the system, please, we want to be even better." Lunarpunk welcomes regulation because it will kill competition that cannot solve these problems in the presence of the said regulation. But is there a demand for these services? That is the most basic question. Paradoxically, the biggest enemy of Lunarpunk is a lax approach to regulation and a leave and let leave approach. If Solarpunk solutions work because no one attacks them, there is no reason for the Lunarpunk ecosystem to develop. Why go through the trouble of using Monero, Tor, VPN, and encryption when nobody is penalizing you for utilizing transparent cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum? Or when you can easily access any website and send unencrypted emails? I would prefer to use a visually appealing app developed by a large corporation or a group of Solarpunk enthusiasts and publish all my interactions on an auditable blockchain. However, if repercussions arise, Lunarpunk projects take off into the unknown territories, the question still remains, why is there a need for these services? What benefits do they offer that the mainstream financial system lacks? As tracking increases with central bank digital currencies CBDC, every participant in the parallel economy, such as plumbers, hairdressers, musicians, programmers, graphic designers, and anybody else who works without receipts or invoices, requires a payment solution that doesn't leave a trace. The limitations on cash usage and its steady removal from economies worldwide directly contribute to the rise of Lunarpunk solutions. In situations where cash is unavailable, a plumber can opt for accepting gold coins. This remains low risk and low cost when compared to issuing invoices and paying taxes. However, thanks to the existence of anonymous cryptocurrencies, they can simply display a QR code and accept payment electronically. As states intensify their efforts to regulate anonymous transactions, there will be an increased demand for Lunarpunk projects that address issues related to anonymous payments and other financial services like lending, hedging, interest yield, and crowdfunding. Additionally, the need for communication services such as encrypted messaging, video calling, file transfers, and group conversations will also rise. In cases of repression in social organizations, for example, anti-war groups in Russia, users who wish to discuss sensitive topics without fear will turn to anonymous and encrypted communication tools. If a plumber wants to send a quote to a customer, he desires it in a form that cannot be used against him later. Peer-to-peer economy and crypto dealers make crypto available. In the section on ethical Vexlocks crypto dealers, we covered why they're the solution to regulation. Most of these projects are not only technological, but also have a social aspect. Cryptocurrencies aren't just transaction formats, internet protocols for sending transactions, or nice wallet apps. They can be seen as a tomato vendor displaying a QR code for payment. To access these technologies, someone must make them available to us. The Lunarpunk approach doesn't expect corporations like Meta, Google, or Apple to provide these technologies for our use. This isn't because they don't want to. Facebook's attempts to introduce cryptocurrency faced significant opposition from states. The mobile coin project, created by the nonprofit organization behind Signal, faced failure due to accessibility issues. Despite the technology working well, society's trust in it did not follow suit. In countries where THC-containing cannabis is banned, we can be sure that we won't find it at popular stores like Lidl or Whole Foods, nor at a pharmacy nearby. Corporations often become targets for attacks because their owners wish to enjoy luxurious experiences rather than face imprisonment. However, high THC marijuana remains widely available globally. With decentralized production and a peer-to-peer economy, the distribution of this substance is sustained by numerous small-scale dealers who make it accessible to anyone expressing interest. Since its prohibition, creative destruction, which includes producers and distributors facing legal consequences, has led to a market that adapts well to the current legal situation. Pot dealers have found a way to conduct their business without facing punishment. The foundation of the peer-to-peer economy in cryptocurrencies is not primarily about the crypto dealers, but rather it focuses on addressing the matching needs of peers within a community. Someone may need to pay rent with fiat currency, while another person wants to purchase cryptocurrencies. In this situation, friends come together, exchange cash for crypto, and help each other out. When no counterpart can be found in their social circle, professional crypto dealers step in to facilitate the transaction. Regulation plays a crucial role in determining how crypto dealers operate. In an unregulated environment, centralized exchanges emerged. These platforms did not require users to undergo identity checks, nor did they report surveillance data to chain analysis firms, financial authorities, or tax offices. Instead, they allowed anyone to buy and sell cryptocurrencies through their platform. As regulation took over the crypto industry, traditional firms started to provide worse service, reporting users, verifying users, and even censoring transactions. This involvement in financial tracking created an opportunity for a peer-to-peer economy that offered the original unregulated services. Although not advertised at bus stops, this alternative market thrived. In most of the Western world, the peer-to-peer crypto economy is less regulated than traditional businesses. As a result, meeting with a crypto dealer typically takes place in casual settings like cafes, where you can enjoy a good flat white and engage in conversation. However, if further repression occurs, these meetings may happen under moonlight, with both parties wearing sunglasses and black hoodies in deserted areas. The shape of Lunarpunk is influenced by the attacks it faces, but just as no country has successfully banned marijuana, the parallel economy will persist. In most places around the world, there are laws governing certain substances, but despite this, trade continues to flourish even where possession is considered a serious crime. As long as demand exists, supply will follow. It's hard to predict how the peer-to-peer economy involving cryptocurrencies will adapt when faced with specific bans or restrictions. Just like I couldn't have predicted that in Moscow, marijuana would be sold by drop gangs who, after receiving payment, would send their clients a message revealing where their package was hidden. It could be under a park bench, inside a lockbox with a code, or practically anywhere. Given the variety of regulations across different regions, it's likely that the decentralized crypto market will develop an array of solutions to these challenges. If we were to lose access to traditional currency, perhaps your preferred cryptocurrency might be traded for things like eggs, gold coins, or even an Amazon gift card. Or maybe a can of diesel fuel. Why cryptoanarchy works the OODA loop. The history of privacy technologies, including anonymity, encryption, and signing, dates back to at least the cypherpunks movement in the early 1990s. Of course, encryption itself has been around much longer than that. This is also connected to Timothy C. May's cryptoanarchy concept, discussed in his Crypto-Anarchist Manifesto. He talks about how these technologies will create a world where governments have less influence on our lives. So, how can lunarpunk, cryptoanarchy, and cypherpunk affect the laws that are practically enforced? If we can communicate, produce, and pay anonymously within an internet environment, nation-state rules based on violence against physical bodies become unnecessary. How is it possible for certain software to prevent the enforcement of laws? Conflicts, including those between an individual and the state, follow what's known as the OODA loop. In military terminology, this cycle consists of four parts: observation, orientation, understanding what is happening, deciding how to react, and action. Both sides involved in a conflict go through this OODA loop. Different approaches to increasing freedom primarily focus on the last two steps. For instance, law reforms or decriminalization can change how an attacker, such as the state, decides and acts. A law permitting possession of marijuana, for example, affects how judges decide cases when possession is discovered. Narrowly defined cryptoanarchy, and more broadly speaking cypherpunks, focus on the first two parts of the OODA loop. If someone conducts business over the internet, like a Belarusian programmer, and doesn't pay taxes from that business, it doesn't necessarily mean a judge would rule in their favor or that the state wouldn't use violence against them, leading to imprisonment. Thanks to encryption, privacy technologies, and anonymous payments, the state will not even know if something has happened. The observation part of the OODA loop won't yield any results, or if it does find out, it won't know what happened. It won't be able to figure out who did what, for whom, how much, and whether they got paid. If it's not possible to identify the individual against whom the state is supposed to exercise violence, like imprisonment or confiscation of property, then the law becomes ineffective because it's unenforceable. Of course, we must mention that the cypherpunk vision faces a major operational security problem in reality. In practice, people often make various mistakes registering an email address under their own name, occasionally failing to encrypt something, and so on. The reason I write about cypherpunks here is that this philosophy implies what cryptographic techniques are used. It's not just basic encryption that makes messages unreadable. Some communication tools employ other privacy methods, blind signatures, anonymization techniques, and perfect forward secrecy. Let's discuss the last one on the list. When we share an encryption key, a password, and it becomes known, any past or future messages encrypted with that key can be decrypted. Perfect forward secrecy means that even if the password is discovered, it won't enable retroactive decryption of messages. To do this, an attacker would need to actively interfere with communication which has already occurred, so they'd have to travel back in time. The attacker can only decrypt future messages, and even then, solely if they successfully intercept the communication and alter its content. Another slightly more advanced technique is called ring signatures, which enable the creation of cryptocurrencies where it's hard to determine the specific coins used in transactions. This concept can also be referred to as plausible deniability, making it impossible to prove who sent a particular message since both parties involved know the key. An agent provocateur could potentially create the message, rendering it difficult to establish authorship with certainty. These techniques enhance the privacy features of encrypted communication and allow for social networks in the form of communication groups. With the help of cryptocurrencies, establishing business relationships on these social networks is feasible without state control or reliance on traditional financial systems. This contributes to individuals' sovereignty by separating some aspects of their business and communication activities from their physical identity. Thanks to reputation systems, we can communicate with individuals whom we only know by their nicknames. Decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAO, are responsible for managing assets worth hundreds of millions to billions of dollars. These organizations consist of anonymous members who have never physically met and don't know each other's official names. They're also aware that if a problem arises, they cannot turn to the court system because they have no knowledge of which country their counterparts reside in. To avoid conflicts, these relationships must be established in a manner that minimizes potential disputes. Instead of implementing reforms, such as legalizing drugs or prostitution, or preventing enforcement actions like those against drug cartels and police officers attempting to enforce laws, Cryptoanarchy aims to halt conflict right from the start. By utilizing codenames, anonymity, encryption, and anonymous payments, we can shut down law enforcers who instigate conflicts so that they remain completely unaware of any occurrences. When you are at a red light, cryptoanarchy occurs when you decide to cross an empty street. It's similar to having a prohibited surgery in another country, like medical tourism, or earning untaxed income that remains unknown to anyone else. This strategy only works for so-called victimless crimes. If someone is harmed, whether physically or property-wise, there will be harm and the OODA loop will advance to the next step. In this case, the victim becomes aware of the rule violation, leading to observation. Crypto anarchists argue that a victimless crime does not exist. It's just an arbitrary rule without any basis in standard interpersonal relations or justice, as most people perceive it. The principles of live and let live and the golden rule of don't do anything you wouldn't want others to do to you don't prohibit victimless crimes, since there is no damaged counterparty involved. Encrypted communication tools, anonymization tools, and cryptocurrencies make this cypherpunk vision a reality, thereby increasing personal sovereignty for everyone who uses them. Punishment for opinions or censorship becomes nearly impossible in non-democratic countries due to information dissemination. We remain individuals living in the physical world with bodies, but much of our activity occurs within the domain of the mind, in crypto space, cypherspace. Lunarpunk is how these technologies will progress and evolve. When an attack happens, regulation, ban, breach, a reaction follows, crash, bankruptcy of fragile services. This leads to a larger part of the market being taken over by services resistant to similar attacks, resulting in an improved Lunarpunk ecosystem. An ecosystem made up of numerous fragile elements can be anti-fragile if the survival selection criterion favors products that withstand such attacks. Cypherpunk proposes specific technologies and their potential applications, mapping their usage while monitoring societal outcomes. Lunarpunk delves into the interactions within this ecosystem, considering individual cypherpunk projects alongside attackers. Now, who will emerge victorious? History doesn't often provide definitive winners. Such notions are usually oversimplified historical accounts. Take World War Roman II, for instance. If we base our judgment on surrender documents, the victors seem apparent. However, upon examining the devastated economies and staggering death tolls, or even the spread of communism in Europe, we can still observe the war's ramifications today. As for regulators, the solarpunk world and lunarpunk will coexist side by side. Solarpunk endeavors to introduce an innovative approach towards enhancing our global situation. From historical experiments, we have witnessed various examples of decentralized autonomous organizations, innovative ways to fund public goods or projects. Ethereum was essentially the first. Initial coin offering ICO and automated decentralized exchanges based on liquidity pools. However, the state regulator intervenes by providing guidelines for ICOs or establishing rules for exchanges. Subsequently, Lunarpunk emerges, taking successful market projects and transforming them into their dark lunar form. This transformation involves anonymity engineering, zero-knowledge proofs, homomorphic encryption, mixers, and non-logging layers. This cycle is expected to continue, making it unwise to predict winners. Personally, I am pleased to see Solarpunk exploring new possibilities. I'm happy that regulators are encouraging Lunarpunk programmers to create improved and stronger versions of what has already proven useful in the Solarpunk marketplace. Since I don't expect global agreement on deregulation, this cycle will continue until someone runs out of energy or funding. The need for Lunarpunk services may vanish, or perhaps Solarpunk will invent everything. Alternatively, no one might take regulators seriously. There could also be a rare coincidence: the regulators decide not to hinder the progress that Solarpunk will bring about, and the Lunarpunk solution won't be required. This scenario is improbable, but in any case, we win. Lunarpunk presents an opportunity not only for the parallel economy, but also for new fields in computing. Programming in an anonymous and privacy-preserving manner, known as anonymity engineering, is significantly more challenging and quite different from traditional computer programming. Cryptocurrencies have opened up new possibilities through the Lunarpunk way, enabling us to create a better life for ourselves. By possessing private keys to cryptocurrencies and adhering to basic security measures, we gain access to opportunities that were previously unavailable. They serve as an asymmetric weapon against oppressive regimes, unjust laws, arbitrary property confiscation, and injustice. In non-dictatorial environments where the current democratic system is satisfactory, there may be no immediate need for these options. However, it's wise to keep them in reserve as a form of insurance should our surroundings become more authoritarian. This article represents a chapter from my book titled Cryptocurrencies: Hack Your Way to a Better Life. Discover even more captivating content like this within the book. It acts as a comprehensive guide for Bitcoin and cryptocurrency ninjas, covering topics such as utilizing the Lightning Network, accepting cryptocurrencies, exploring opportunities across various professions, navigating diverse market scenarios, and leveraging crypto to enhance your life. Get it on my eShop BTC, BTC and XMR, and even old-school plastic or at Amazon.
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.